Did you know I'm utterly insane?
Because the whole world gone crazy!
Yeah, you want to see crazy? I'll show you.
Have you gone mad?
Most everyone's mad here.
Everybody, welcome back to the second installment of the Milkshakes Markets Madness segment. This is a part of our journey in doing the show that kind of got sidelined for a little bit, maybe because we wanted to focus on markets, maybe because you guys wanted us to focus on markets. But Brett and I just have such a good time with the madness in the world. We had to bring it back. And we're clearly so mad that we're wearing the same shirt. Brent, there's a really funny skit that comes to mind. I don't know if you recall this, but it was back in the day when the original Mission Impossible came out, and Ben Stiller did this like skit with Tom Cruise for one of the movie awards. It was probably MTV or something like that, where he was pretending to be his stunt double.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And there's like a one interview scene, and they're both in the black t-shirt, and he's like pretending to finish his sentence.
I don't know, it's kind of like we almost finish each other's sentences, kind of.
I mean, I don't think we've ever finished each other's sentences.
Anyway, so it kind of struck me a little awkward as that clip was intended to be. So speaking of awkwardness and madness, I think the most maddening and or awkward or just funny thing that's going on right now is this Zuck versus Musk potential fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like the gift that just keeps on giving, right? And it's like two billionaire kindergartners, you know, fighting each other in the public on the playground. I mean, that's literally what it is. It's like two of the richest people in the world are mad at each other, and they want to fight about it, and then they want everybody to see them do it. So, you know, I don't know if people follow this or not, but I got a real good kick out of it because, you know, Elon, you know, everybody loves to hate Elon, which, you know, it's easy to do. But, you know, he's kind of been portrayed as the bad guy because he took over Twitter and he changed the name and did all these things that, you know, a lot of people didn't like. And so the way this all developed was, I don't know, a month or so ago, Elon tweets out, you know, something about fighting Zuckerberg. You know, maybe we should just fight, you know. Oh, because Zuckerberg started a company, Threads, which was basically a direct competitor to Twitter, right? And it took off like crazy in the first couple of days, and then it crashed. And so I think that's how it started. And then Zuckerberg responded to Musk's initial tweet saying, you know, just name the place. And so then there was all this hubbub of, you know, maybe they're going to do it at the Colosseum in Rome. And there's all these, you know, are they going to do it at the Octagon in Vegas? And then, I don't know, it was a week ago, Zuckerberg comes out and says, you know, Elon keeps changing the venue and can't commit to anything. You know, so yeah, I'm moving on. So then last night, Elon tweets out, well, first I joked about fighting, and then he really wanted to fight. So I said, okay. He said, name the place. So, you know, Italy gave us a Colosseum, but he was conveniently unavailable. So I suggested Zuckerberg's backyard as a safe space, to which he couldn't make it. And, you know, and basically here we are. So basically it's just the back and the forth and the back and the forth. And it's so representative of everything that's good and wrong about the world right now that, it's literally the madness. It is the heart of the madness right now.
It is the heart of the madness. And I think, for me, I think one of the funny things is just watching, I think for a lot of people, it's just watching the world's richest man oftentimes just act like one of your, you know, bar buddies.
Totally.
And people get really upset about that. Like, you know, I think if you have that much money, most people would exercise the privilege to be themselves instead of, you know, the facade most people, you know, portray to kind of crawl a couple inches in life. So I think maybe that's where some of the anger, there's a resentment that he gets to kind of be the buffoon and still get to play in all his money.
Yep.
But I also find it funny because he, his mouth just always gets him in trouble. I think that's how he ended up with Twitter. So
totally.
Totally. So I'm pretty confident this is going to end up with him on his back and in pain.
Yeah.
But until then, it's been a fun show. And speaking of some of the entertainment that's been going on Twitter lately, we've had a new account that's kind of swept Twitter by surprise to some extent, which is Twitter history. I think it's kind of just
Trump
started
history.
Out. I'm sorry. Trump history. Yes. Trump history, which is just, you know, memeing all these different times in history. And it's just such a perfect play on the joke that you know, Trump in his mind has invented and participated in everything that's ever been great on planet Earth.
Yeah, I mean, it is so perfectly self-reverential that it's really incredible how smart it is, because it not only makes those who like Trump just laugh, but it absolutely drives the people who hate Trump crazy, right? And, you know, the crashing of the intersection of those two things just makes it so great. And it's one of those things. And not only that, but it's like it features AI, right? Which is also part of what's good to the zeitgeist. And it's these amazing pictures that have placed Trump in historical events that makes him look like he was naturally there. Mm-hmm. And you know, Trump just loves it, right? That's the thing. Is you know, Trump just absolutely loves it. And you know, the people that hate Trump just absolutely hate it. And it's so funny. It's almost like the Babylon Bee, right? It's like a very focused Babylon Bee, which, you know, these, you know, satirical headlines. And, you know, anyway, it's quickly become one of my favorite accounts on Twitter, if not my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, you look back, I don't think it's hit a month yet, but you look back on like its earliest tweets, maybe a couple hundred likes, which is no small feat in general anyway, to, you know, fast forward a few weeks and he's, you know, every post is probably getting tens of thousands of likes. The write-ups are great. You know, if it's something, I'd say within the past like 60 years, their use of AI is great because they age Trump, like Trump teaching Tiger Woods how to play golf. It's like a younger looking version of Trump. But then when they go way, way back to just ancient, you know, civilizations and history and, you know, Trump introducing different people to Jesus and what they caption is my favorite part is it says colorized, as if they had like a black and white photo from back in the day that they've now, you know, used technology to colorize. So the levels of satire there are fantastic. So that's
well, the other thing is I'm not even completely convinced that whoever started it. And the thing is, here's the thing. I'm not a jealous person. I very, very rarely get, you know, jealous of something that somebody else has or the whatever. But this is one case where I'm actually a little bit mad that I didn't think of it because it's so good. And I'm not sure that whoever created it is a Trump fan. It's possible that they absolutely hate Trump. But and they're trolling. It could be like the most like reverse psychology troll of all time, because it could be that they're actually trolling the people who like it the best, right?
Could be.
They're, you know, and people don't remember this, but like 20 or 30 years ago, this is like back in the 90s, when somebody asked Trump if he would ever run for president or if he would ever run for as a politician. And he said, you know, I don't know, but if I did, I'd run as a Republican. They're like, why is that? He's like, he said, because Republicans are so dumb, I could say whatever I would want and they would believe me, right? And sure enough, like 20 years later, he runs for president and they love him. And so, you know, like I said, I don't know who started it. I don't know what their viewpoint is, but they have so perfectly captured like the zeitgeist. I think my wife got mad at me one time. I said zeitgeist. She said, that's not the way you're supposed to say it. So the zeitgeist of the moment, they've definitely tapped into it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It does feel like someone who's relatively neutral and can see the humor in it because they're not emotionally tied up in the politics. But, you know, Trump does kind of represent the, you know, in the 2016 elections and certainly in the 2020 elections, he very much so represented that forgotten part of America. And so I think it's kind of an interesting interlude into another thing that's somewhat gone viral this past week, is this song by a gentleman, Oliver Anthony, Richmond, yes. North of Richmond.
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away, drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is living in the new world.
It's kind of got that country slash bluegrass feel. As someone who's played music much of my life, I can say that the combination of both is what he's doing on the guitar, the lyrics, his voice. It's not just an anthem. He's definitely talented, but it's coming across and getting attention like an anthem at just the time when it feels like that forgotten part of the country is once again forgotten.
Yeah, you know, again, that's a guy that's really tapped into the moment, and you know, this isn't like some arbitrarily manufactured thing, right? I mean, you can tell by not only the words that he's written and the way he sings it, but the people he's singing it to and the places he's going to do it. He's just like a good old boy from, you know, West Virginia, and he's a simple guy, and you know, he's kind of singing from the heart, and a lot of people are resonating with it. One of the things I thought that was kind of funny about it, and again, it shows you how like out of touch and clueless politicians are, is that some politician heard it and it's like, wow, this is a really good song. I really like what this guy has to say, you know, and it should be listened to. And okay, that's right, it should. But literally the song is about the Richmond north of Richmond, and the Richmond north of Richmond refers literally to the politicians in D.C., that's literally what the song is about. And so, you know, the fact that this guy wasn't quite smart enough to pick up on that is, I mean, it's just these people never cease to amaze me with their, you know, lack of self-awareness. Anyway, the other thing that about it is, you know, it did have a little bit of controversy associated too, because some people were saying it had tinges of racism or class or, one side of the tracks versus the other, and it was more of a, instead of bringing people together, it was divisive. And the thing is though this is kind of the environment we're in, right? This is one of those fourth turning things, that this is when things like this happen. It's in this type of an environment that these types of songs or these types of shows or movies or whatever it is get released, you know. And by the way, before I forget, not that we've talked about this before, but I hadn't really noticed it, or I hadn't really picked up on it. Perhaps that's my lack of you know, just awareness or whatever. But we talked about Barbie and Oppenheimer a week ago, and I was on this conversation last night, with Raul and Real Vision, this Twitter Spaces, and we were talking about all these challenges that we're going through, and you know, the Barbie and the Oppenheimer. The fact that they're out right now, I think, is so apropos of the time, because on the one hand, we have, you know, it's the age of just total silliness and, you know, whatever you want to call it, just the nothingness, right? The famous for being famous, the social media, the likes, the, you know, consumerism, and just all the stuff that isn't really important. But then on the other hand, Oppenheimer, which is about, you know, this crazy technology that's being released. And, you know, on the one hand, it's really exciting, but on the other hand, it could blow up the whole world. And, you know, we have that going on with, you know, with AI, and, you know, military conflicts are picking up again. And so it's just kind of one of those things of art imitating real life, right? And I think it's interesting that those two things, who are complete polar opposites, are so popular right now. It's like they're the two most popular movies. They're all over social media. They're all over, you know, the media kind of in general, entertainment industry, however you want to say that. And yet they're the polar opposites, but that's also what we have going on in the country, right? We've got the Democrats and the Republicans. We've got the left versus the right. And we've got the East Coast and the West Coast versus the flyover states. And it's pretty interesting. Here we go again, that word again.
Yeah, interesting times. One thing I'll add to our chat there about the Richmond, North of Richmond song is the song itself is impactful, but the visualizations are very profound as well. You have, like you said, a good old country boy. He's kind of in the Virginia woods. There's a busted, beat up car that's never going to move again behind him. He's got his man's best friend, dog, just chilling there, not even blinking an eye. And you know, here's a guy singing his heart out. So I think there's so much there for people to connect with. And, you know, he did a show not long after that, you know, 72 hours or so after that song kind of went viral, and they ended up filling, I don't know, 20 acres or something like that of cars, people coming to see it. So this kind of goes back to, you know, the emotions that people are experiencing and feeling right now. And I don't think we're going to have time to get into it here. I mean, this was supposed to be the lighthearted madness part, but you also have mentioned recently that, you know, the likelihood of an election going through in 2024 being very, very low, because no matter which side wins, they're going to deny the other one, you know, a fair election.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point. And, you know, it's funny because I thought this was going to be the lighthearted, maddening section too. But, you know, we're touching on some important things. And I actually think this is extremely important. And, you know, the one thing I would say is, you know, I had actually had several people send that to me over social media this weekend. And part of the reason is they just thought I would want to see it. But I had several people send it to me because there's a line in there that talks about, it says the dollar ain't shit, right? Like the dollar is losing its value. And that's, you know, it's hard for people like him. And I think people sent that to me in the belief that I would be surprised by this and that I wouldn't be accepting of this. And that goes against kind of my whole dollar theory. And, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. It's again, I completely recognize the problems in the United States and the problems with the dollar. It's a horrible currency. It's just that everybody else is in the same boat. And I think people forget that a lot. And it's not that the dollar will go up despite all these problems in the United States. It's largely that the dollar will go up because of all these problems, because all of these problems are not just going to stay local. They will be reacted to globally. And I think that is what will lead to the chaos that will then push the dollar higher. And on this topic, one of the points that I made last night on this Twitter Spaces, and I think I kind of tried to make it a little bit of a joke, but I'm actually very serious about it, is that, you know, on this channel and other, you know, podcasts that we do, and on FinTwit, and, you know, in most of the environments that people interact with me, it has something to do with money or investing or economics. But I really, really think the most important investment that people can make over the next year is their own social networks, personal relationships, and who they can trust and who they can't, and who they can get along with and who they can't. And the best advice that I can give to people is figure out some system that allows you to keep your sanity in the midst of all the chaos. Because if you get outraged at every little thing, you are going to blow up next year. Because there is no way we are getting through the next year and the presidential election with everybody getting along. And I think those who are able to kind of stay calm and in the fog of war, so to speak, are the ones that are going to make it through. And I think the ones that lose their mind as soon as things start to get a little bit hot are going to be in big trouble. So, you know, I didn't mean to end this on a soapbox, but I guess I kind of did.
Well, I always kind of thought the madness segment would also be a bit punchier, but so far the two we've done have almost become full length episodes, you know, and one of the things that you're highlighting there too, you know, there's talk of that we're already in a version of a World War III. It's a cyber war. It's being fought in info war, if you will. And yep. And so yep. when you're talking about this fog of war, I think it's very relevant heading into an election cycle, because it becomes a civil war, not in the military sense, but in the info sense. People are going to be attacking all of us with various forms of propaganda, whether it's your bias or against your bias. The fragment of truth in everything that you're going to hear is going to be very difficult to find. And it's going to be frustrating. People are going to troll just for the sake of trolling and to get a reaction. And then there's others who are intentionally misleading. And amidst all that, you know, the truth somewhere exists. And to be honest, most of us will never really know what part of the story we're hearing is true. So just as you mentioned, although this is the madness section or segment of our weekly episodes, try not to go mad yourself. So Brent, I appreciate you hanging out with us for an extended version of the madness. We had some other stuff that we wanted to talk about, but at this point, I think we'll save some of that, including some of the entertaining engagement you've had with other Twitter followers. So until maybe next week, I'm sure you'll accumulate a few more frenemies and enemies. And for everyone else, keep your head and stay classy out there. We'll catch up with everyone this weekend. We've got a great full-length episode coming your way. A lot of fun stuff that we teased in the midweek update, and plenty more has kind of landed on our desk since then as well. So we'll have some fun here in a couple days. Brent, thank you as well. For everybody, you can follow Mr. Santiago Capital at Santiago AU Fund. You can follow me at John Kutzmita. Check out all the fun stuff we have going on our YouTube channel at Milkshakes Pod. During this episode, Brent had referenced some Twitter spaces that he was participating in. We've clipped some of that up and it's shared on the Milkshakes Twitter, which is also at Milkshakes Pod. So lots of stuff for you guys to chew on until we see you in a couple days. Thanks again, Brent, and we'll see you soon as well.
All right. See you, everybody.
This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.